Well, welcome, gentlemen, and thank you very much for appearing here today. Could you please, for the purposes of Hansard and the record, can you please tell us your full name and the capacity in which you appear here today?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for having us. Luca Belgiornanetis, founding director of the New Democracy Foundation.
Ian Walker, executive director of the New Democracy Foundation, and we're appearing here organisationally.
Thank you very much. While this public hearing relates to the inquiry into the conduct of the 2016 federal election, as you're aware, we are focusing today on political donations. And although the committee does not require you to provide evidence under oath, I wish to advise that this is a formal proceeding of the Parliament, and giving false or misleading evidence is a serious matter and may be regarded as contempt of the Parliament. These proceedings are being broadcast and recorded by Hansard. As public proceedings, the committee will consider a request to have evidence heard in private session, and should you wish to do so, let us know the grounds and we will consider that. I now invite you to make an opening statement and then we'll open up to questions from the committee.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Chair, committee members. We are very grateful for being given the opportunity to present to your inquiry. Thank you. Some of you may already know of us and our work. Briefly, the New Democracy Foundation is a small not-for-profit research and advocacy group. Our practical work consists of citizen jury type consultation projects that seek public judgment beyond popular opinion. These consultation projects assist in policy formulation. Why? Because they help build public trust. For this inquiry, we think there is value in undertaking a public consultation exercise. Let me hasten to say that we have not spoken to any of the committee members about this proposal. And I also hasten to say that this may seem like overreach on our behalf. What might sound as a witness spruiking for work to a parliamentary committee, but I beg your indulgence for a little so I might explain. I don't need to tell you that parliamentary inquiries are very demanding, as they invariably deal with complex public policy matters. However, peculiar to this investigation, perhaps unique, the task seems even tougher because of two principal factors. Firstly, political donations conjure up widespread public cynicism. The very mention of campaign funding solicits general misgivings in the community because there is a perception that moneyed interests distort democratic outcomes. I don't need to tell you this. Secondly, much of the electorate out there watching would see this committee, and I beg your indulgence again, respectfully, as having a conflict of interest, being both poacher and gamekeeper. Given these two factors, as I said, peculiar to this investigation, we submit that the committee's overarching challenge is one of garnering public trust. It is in these special circumstances that we respectfully suggest that the committee might consider sharing the review task with a group of everyday Australians. We can point to a number of jury processes which have proven to be of practical benefit to government. Perhaps I could spend just a minute or two describing the citizen jury process. It involves giving a small sample of citizens the time to investigate the committee's recommendations and to identify where consensus can be found. By combining random selection, the provision of time, and facilitated deliberation, best practice public consultation is achieved. At the end of their deliberations, the citizens in their recommendations might request the committee to consider changing a few things. The committee is not bound by the citizens' report, only to offer a detailed response. In working with government in these public consultation exercises, we find that people are fair, people are capable, and people can reach common ground on difficult subjects. Most importantly, we find that people trust everyday people like themselves. When a deliberative representative mini-public obtain agreement on a regime, then in our experience, the broader community is inclined to that agreement. We realise that this presentation might appear somewhat self-serving. However, we maintain that better practice public consultation is to everyone's benefit. That concludes our presentation. And if there are no immediate questions, we could go on to briefly describe some recent government projects that we've been involved in.
I think we do have questions or...
Well, perhaps more a response, gentlemen. And we have had the opportunity to discuss such an approach. And perhaps I might say from my perspective, and hopefully... Well, if others differ, they'll have an opportunity to say so very shortly. I think we should be very clear in saying that I think all of us share a view that our responsibility here isn't just about dealing with the details of the inquiries we've been presented with. We've got a responsibility to uphold and increase public trust in Parliament and government, and so we can spend more time arguing about our different approaches to those challenges. And the more we can be transparent in discharging our responsibilities as this committee, I think we probably all agree, the easier that challenge will be. I think we should be clear about that in responding to your opening. And also, from a personal point of view, I do think we should and could do more to open up more of our decision-making on issues such as this, which go not to particular policy propositions, but to how our democracy can work better, to a wider group of citizens, not least to build a better and stronger conversation between those of us who hold elected office and those who don't, but perhaps to also expand an appreciation of some of the challenges of how representative democracy can work. So personally, subject to our executive government masters and my colleagues, I think it's something that we should be looking at.
Thank you, Deputy
Chair. Just endorse what Mr. Giles has said. In fact, we've had a discussion on this yesterday, not in relation to this inquiry, but to the Section 44 inquiry, because in the mind certainly of the committee, it's becoming very clear that to deal with the Section 44 issue, it will require constitutional amendment, which is a very hard challenge for a group of politicians to prosecute the argument when people see that it's just fixing our own paperwork. But it's actually, we've found there's some very serious implications now for our democratic processes and elections. So the approach you're talking about, we're actually discussing how could we achieve public support for a referendum on this issue.
And what struck me in the hour we've had this morning is that while it's televised, we could never get a million people to watch this. But our experience is we're very good at getting 50 people to highly engage in it. And if we saw 50 citizens from all walks of life, blue collar, white collar, no collar, hearing, oh, what's the test, such as Mr. Morton with, seek to influence, actually getting them engaged on that topic, if they can find some common ground and stand next to you as a group, that in essence is what the approach is designed to achieve, is not what are the disparate views that you may hear as a committee, but when people hear those disparate views, what is it they could actually agree on?
Mm. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
No. I just wanted to clarify, if I could.
Sorry, please.
Madam Chair. Yes, I hadn't. I think we met some months back, Madam Chair, and I think Ian met with the Deputy Chair. I'm not sure that we made specifically that proposal, but thank you for clarifying that. In fact, we perhaps made something similar to that directly to you. I'm not sure whether we made it at the time we met, but anyway, here it is more specifically.
You did, yes. Okay. Mr. Dick.
Can I just ask a question about the 50, I was going to say citizens' jury, but citizens' panel.
Sure.
How would they be selected, pre-selected or appointed? Because, hopefully you've got a good answer, but if the Parliament was to do that, I assume, is it going to be done on partisan lines, nominated?
No, completely. So there are two methods that have been used, and you've hit exactly the reason we exist, which is no one trusts government, the public sector more broadly, to do selection, so we do it. The core is to take the broadest possible database. So Australia Post have a database of every place they've delivered mail to, do a random extract, invite people to say, are you available for the time we're going to need, which is probably 5 days. That goes into a database, and there's another round of random selection, which simply roughly matches to the census profile. So we follow by age, gender. We ask people whether they own or rent their home. It's a very effective indicator for income and education. We're simply trying to get a sample of people from all walks of life.
But who would, the ABS would do that? I'm just trying to work out how you actually get the people in the room, because obviously someone has to call for expressions of interest. Would they have to be on the Australian electoral roll if it's just going to Australia Post to residents?
We found the electoral rolls are too inaccurate to be useful. We get 20% return rates. So the answer is the...
How do you get access to electoral rolls?
So it's discretionary by state. It there's a discretionary clause amounts to is a action relate to the primary purposes of an MP. So in South Australia, we've been allowed to use it. In Victoria, not in New South Wales. It comes down to the discretionary power of an electoral commissioner.
Apologies, Mr. Dick, I just...
In short, you take a large database and anyone that the public trusts could do it. So you're absolutely right. An electoral commission could do it. A sheriff's office could do it. It's a simple task. It's about picking the entity to do the selection and making it transparent. On our projects, we use an oversight board of the most angry active interests.
Would being a member of a political party exclude you for being...
No, we use a threshold of are you in paid political employment?
Right.
So it's only if you're trying to get a wider sample of the community, that's where we see the threshold test applied.
So you could end up with the party president of the Labor Party or the Liberal Party, who is in an honorary position sitting on the panel. I have
actually ended up with that in one of our first projects for Premier Wetherill. Out of 24,000 random addresses, 2,100 people responded and said they were available. In a random draw of 43, I picked the head of communications for the opposition leader. That's how randomisation works. Occasionally the lotto numbers will come up one and two first.
That person wouldn't sit on it because they're paid employment,
that's,
right?
That's where we originated we had to let it stand.
The party president of the Labor Party, who is an honorary position of the Liberal Party, who is just a school teacher, they could sit on it. I'm just trying to... How do you limit
the...
Right, so they could... That you'd
yes,
have
that's right.
Party,
but the likelihood,
party officials
the,
sitting, that's right, sitting
the,
on this.
There are a million to one odds at
that's
this
right.
point.
Yeah.
But we don't exclude. The more it looks manipulated, people simply won't trust it. So we go for very simple rules. It is a lottery, and people may have the winning lottery ticket.
It's basically meant to be descriptive representative of the community at large. So people can see, well, as Ian had described, age, the bell curve, and gender... 50-50 more or less, and income distribution.
Ethnicity?
No.
We don't use that.
No.
There is a roughly equivalent desire across society for people to be involved in a public decision. There's one or two exceptions to that, but as a general rule, people are roughly equivalently interested to be involved.
There may have to be some particular emphasis done for Indigenous participation on occasions. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Lineholm.
This is sortition, isn't it?
Correct. Yes. Correct. Sortition is the application of this at a parliamentary representative level, if you like. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Some of my party members think this is a great idea. I'm not entirely convinced, I have to say. But one of the concerns would be how do you avoid moral panics? I'm making a very rash assumption that politicians may not be susceptible to moral panics, and maybe that's not true. But anyway, that's for the sake of the discussion, let's make that assumption. So we've got some moral panic going on about bikies or gangs or violence in King's Cross or something like that. How do you avoid an outcome that's... influenced by people who have very strong views on that, which may in fact be out of step with the rest of the community, and bearing in mind that in most cases those involved in making that decision, it's a cost-free decision making for them because they're spending other people's money or making decisions about other people's lives.
It's essentially the jury process, and so you could argue the same in threat of a jury. A lot of people say, well, the jury is not accountable. Well, fair enough, but they prosecute their responsibilities appropriately.
The short answer to your question is time. People come in with very passionate views in the first half hour, and if you were to run a lot of consultations that are an evening or 3 hours, you can't get people out of pitchforks mode. But our typical projects get people to meet for 5 or 6 days across 3 months, and say out of the first day, we're asking people, what would you need to know to make an informed decision? So actually asking people what supports your view, what facts do you need, what experts do you want to hear from, and simply slowing the decision down is where we move people out of, frankly, public opinion into more of a public judgment mode. Akin to a criminal trial, what people think coming in might be quite polarising, and it's the process of time and hearing from competing views. and then asking them, I'm not asking what an individual thinks. We're asking what position you can agree to as a group does moderate that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Our experience too, as I was saying at the beginning, is that we are seeking to enhance public judgment over popular opinion, and we find that that process of the longer term informed deliberation, facilitated deliberation, achieves that.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. This is very different to the other evidence we've received. Sure. Probably the closest I'll come to participating on Shark Tank, the television show. Don't take them as my criticisms, but I'm being devil's advocate. What's the difference between what you do and any other focus group that a research company might do?
Yeah.
I'll just ask them together. So.
And then that will do me.
Yeah.
Given that you take your participants through such a long process, and that's a compliment, with a lot of information, and they get to a point, that's all well and good, but what if it's an issue that then requires the Australian people to come to a point and they don't have the benefit of the consideration of all that information over a long period of time, like you do in your process? So just because the people that you work with over that time come up with a conclusion,
yeah. How
do we know at the end that the Australian people who won't pay the same attention will get there? I suppose Senator Lynehelm's been asking something along these lines in relation to possible constitutional reform for Section 44. I know I've kind of slipped the brief a little bit, Chair, I apologise, but...
No, but please, I think I opened that door.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd like to answer your second question first, because you're right, it's a legitimate criticism that once you start to educate people, they stop being representative. They are different to the wider community. Our experience where decisions are trusted, and generally the measure for that is, has the elected group been able to act on their recommendations and take a different decision? It's a function of the press. If we go out at the beginning of a project and say, this is a jury of people from across all walks of life, and this is the problem they've been given, we find that the citizens look at them and say, people like me. Where the projects do not work is if you wait all the way to the end and there's a set of recommendations and you say, and here's the jury that was involved, a cynical public will say, well, I don't like the recommendations, so I don't like the people. So in terms of bringing the wider community along with that discussion, it's very much absolutely a function of the commissioning authority giving us the freedom to let the people talk in the press, not about potential recommendations, but about their experience. We can back this up with examples. The most notable one was at the 2012 local government elections, actually right at the Canada Bay here in New South Wales, where a mayor who had commissioned a piece of jury work, and it was a piece of jury work related to budgeting, so there was bad news for everyone in relating to changes to rates and disposal of public buildings. But he broke trend. You'll remember the 2011 election was very much very one-sided in New South Wales in favour of the coalition. And out of 150 council areas, the election figures show that he was the only mayor who, on the Labor side, who retained and increased his primary vote. You can't pull apart a lot of causality in elections, but a 1 in 150 result against trend tends to show that the wider community came along with that. Part of that was absolutely a function of The Telegraph showed that jury 5 times, The Herald 3 times. The citizens got to have a look at the people before the result. So that's how I would argue the mechanisms that are used, especially in the United States for this, on a referendum equivalent, is to say, here is the referendum proposal, and they physically attach a page to the ballot to say a jury of citizens was called, and these are the arguments pro and con that they found. So you can do it with a collateral piece. To go to your question as to how it is different from a focus group, and there's two short answers to this. One is a focus group tends to test an answer rather than being given an open question. So an example might be a focus group might look at the willingness. I'm reminded of the Commission of Audit. Willingness of, will you pay $7 to go to the doctor? A jury would ask, how do you want to pay for the health system you want? It's an open question where they can take a revenue or a services approach. But the core is open question, don't test an answer. The result of the huge amount of time these citizens spend is you get the second dividend of they will actually stand up and explain it in the press. Yeah. That's really the 2 points where no focus group member would ever do so.
And the focus group is usually only a weekend or...
And that happened... That happened in Canada Bay. Did the jury members become advocates for the solution?
Yes.
In short, yes, there's a... One of the more interesting pieces of footage, because it's a topic of such difficulty, is we ran the engagement for the nuclear waste storage facility that was considered for South Australia, the high-level nuclear waste. One part of that is a block of news footage where you can see the Premier arriving through a barrage of protesters who are... They're there to shout and hit him with a sign. And then you cross to the people inside who were... Again, all walks of life who are saying, these are the questions I have where I'd like to satisfy myself. We do look at that gap between the insistent protesting voice and just a cross-section of society tends to generate quite different results.
Okay, are there any more questions? No? Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for appearing here today, and you've certainly given us a bit of food for thought, as we said, so we appreciate your time and your input. Thank you.
Very Thanks kind. Thank you again.
Thank you. That concludes today's hearings on the 2016 federal election, and we will now break for until 20 to 11. We will resume with a hearing on Section 44. Thank you.